The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, welcome to a Thursday, and what a Thursday it is. Oh my goodness, I gotta tell you, I start, as you may know by now, my day very early in the morning because, well, I don't sleep well at night. And even if I don't wake up by myself by 5:30, 6 o'clock, I got a little guy named Jackson who wakes me up because he wants his breakfast and he wants to go out. So I'm just at his beck and call. It's his house. I just live here. He's a furry little guy, in case you were wondering, my dog Jackson. Anyway, so I do that. I feed him, let him out, have a cup of coffee, and I commute into my studio, which is about 10 steps from where I sleep. And I start my day doing, you know, researching the news because I write and produce a segment called What's News that runs throughout the day at the top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel. And so I usually, and it's a 6-minute segment. The Progressive Voices needs a 6-minute segment for the top of the hour. On days like today, my first take is a bit longer. So I publish that as a podcast through NicoleSandler.com, where if you subscribe to the podcast of the show, which by the way is free, I don't charge you a monthly subscription rate. Now, I do take donations. That's how I survive. But it's all voluntary. It's like the old public radio model. If you can afford to and you enjoy what you're hearing, I hope you'll contribute. But so that's how it works. It's there for everybody to listen to, like radio used to be. So anyway, today my original version was about 8.5, 9 minutes long. I cut it down to 6 minutes. And then upload it to the server so it runs, you know, at the top of the hour on the Progressive Voices Network. Well, as soon as I got it done this morning, David walks in. He goes, "Oh, my God, did you hear about the GDP?" I'm like, what? No, I didn't see it. Well, the GDP tanked in the second quarter. It dropped by, I want to say, like almost 33%. Let me see if I can't find that news story because it's out of order. The U.S. economy shrank at a whopping 32.9% annualized pace between April and June as the coronavirus slammed businesses and consumers, marking the nation's worst quarterly contraction in history. So that happened. And then the Labor Department released their initial job claims for jobless benefits, which rose to 1.43 million last week. New filings had been slowing into mid-July, but surged again due to many states reversing their reopening plans because people are dying at record rates. And then we got the news that Herman Cain has succumbed to the COVID-19. Herman Cain, former chairman of Godfather Pizza, former head of the restaurant, I forget what the acronym was for it, but there was something weird about it, which I can't remember right now. But Herman Cain, you remember Herman Cain, don't you?
I'm proud to know the Koch brothers. I'm very proud to know the Koch brothers.
He's proud to know the Koch brothers.
Make it sound like that we've had time to go fishing together, hunting together, skiing together, golfing together.
Yeah.
But just so I
remember a rally and told eyes. After that, he was in intensive care and on a ventilator. And what a shame. Herman Cain died. And Donald Trump had the gall to like tweet out right as the funeral for John Lewis ended, his condolences for Herman Cain. Isn't that just horrible? By the way, is infected because he also won't wear a mask or wouldn't wear a mask. But Louis Gohmert's kind of up there in age. We'll see what happens. But in case you don't remember Louis Gohmert, a few years back, he got into it with Eric Holder in a House hearing. This was during the Obama administration. Eric Holder was the attorney general. And Louis Gohmert very famously showed off his big brain power because, you know, he's a stable genius, too, much like the president, when he said this.
Raises a point of personal privilege, but the Attorney General failed to answer my question about what was
after. But he went back in regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Aspersions on my asparagus.
Yeah, you have to listen carefully at the end there. But he accused Eric Holder of casting aspersions on his asparagus. Still have no idea what it means. I'm thinking maybe he had some mushrooms that day. I don't know. But wait, there was still more, because then Donald Trump, you know, this wasn't enough to muck up the news cycle. It wasn't enough to distract us from his ridiculous answers, or I should say non-answers, to the guy from Axios, Jonathan Swan, about whether or not he broached the subject of, you know, Russia paying bounties to Taliban fighters and cohorts for American lives. Trump, you know, and he's like, why should I? It's, you know, they say it's fake news. They say. So once again, this moron believes what some people say over what he's told in his by his intelligence community. And he lied again and said, it was fake. Nobody believes it. And so it didn't even make it to my desk. Another lie, because it did, because it was in his presidential daily brief. You know, the thing that all presidents up until this time read. And then he lied again because he told Jonathan Swan, that he reads it. And not only that, but his comprehension is, you know, super great because he's super smart.
Do you read your recent brief?
I do. I read a lot. Really? You know, I read a lot. They like to say I don't read. I read a lot.
I
comprehend extraordinarily well, probably better than anybody that you've interviewed in a long time.
Oh, God. You know what? I'm sorry. That deserves a song. It just does. By the way, the rebukes to Trump's insanity, what he did was he tweeted out that the election will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent in history. And then he added, delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote, followed by 3 question marks. So I don't know if it was a statement or a question or what. But make no mistake, the president does not have the authority to change the date of the election, which under the Constitution is set by Congress. And actually, of all people, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was asked about this by a Kentucky television station. And he said, quote, never. I do my best turtle voice, but I'm not really good at it. So I'll just read it in regular. Never in the history of the country, through wars, depressions, and the Civil War, have we ever not had a federally scheduled election on time. And we'll find a way to do that again this November 3rd. So the clapbacks, I don't know if that's the right term. The rebukes to Trump's idiocy are coming from all sides. Of course, Nancy Pelosi cited the place in the Constitution that explains it. Pramila Jayapal had a great tweet comeback. Basically, everyone has. This man is just he's throwing the shit against the wall to see what sticks. And then on top of all that, today was John Lewis's funeral in Atlanta. Now, please don't take what I'm about to say the wrong way, because I think John Lewis deserves all the accolades heaped upon him. I think he deserves the highest honors this nation can bestow, because he was an American hero. Unlike many that we've seen, I mean, he's head and shoulders above most who somehow get the title of hero. John Lewis really was. He walked the talk. He was the real deal. He was an American hero. What I don't understand is why we don't honor our heroes as they deserve when they're still alive. So there's this movement on to rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge to the John Lewis Bridge, and absolutely they should do it. But you know what? We should have done it 10 years ago. We should have done it 5 years ago, or thereabouts, on the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, when John Lewis almost gave his life for the movement so that people who came after him could have a better life. Why did we wait till he's dead for this push to honor him? Why do we wait till they're dead to show people how much they mean to us? John Lewis, again, deserves all the accolades in the world, but, you know, parading his body around the country, I just find so horribly morbid, and I know it's a thing. But, you know, his body drawn across the Edmund Pettus Bridge by, you know, in the casket by horses, and then laying in state in the Capitol Rotunda, which I know was an honor. I don't get the whole body staying out. And again, my background is Jewish, even though I'm not religious in any sense, but the tradition is, and Muslims are the same way, you bury your dead within like 24 hours. And if that's not possible because it's the Sabbath or something, immediately thereafter. John Lewis died like 10 days ago. And I still think all the honors should be bestowed upon him, but you know, moving his body around the country, it's just something about that. But then again, I feel the same way about neckties. I just don't understand the reason behind them. So, honor John Lewis. Former President Barack Obama, delivered a beautiful eulogy today at the funeral in Atlanta, and it made me. And again, I wasn't the biggest Obama fan. I had such high hopes for him. Because I thought, yes, we can. And no, he didn't. But, you know, boy, I miss the voice of reason. I miss a president who has a brain, who can speak contemporaneously, who doesn't need to read off a teleprompter, and at the level of a fourth grader who sounds like he's never read the words he's speaking before he read them in front of this worldwide audience. I just don't get it. But Barack Obama spoke truth to power today, and he said a lot of the things that needed to be said, and he did it without calling out the orange idiot who's occupying the Oval Office by name anyway. Here's a little bit of Obama today.
Bo Connor may be gone, but today we witness with our own eyes police officers kneeling on the necks of Black Americans.
Yep.
George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators.
That's right.
We may no longer have to guess the number of jelly beans in a jar in order to cast a ballot. But even as we sit here, there are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws.
You go.
Attacking our voting rights,
yep,
with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
Go figure.
Now, I know this is a celebration of John's life. There are some who might say we shouldn't dwell on such things. But that's why I'm talking about it. John Lewis devoted his time on this earth fighting the very attacks on democracy and what's best in America that we're seeing circulate right now.
He went on for, I think, close to 40 minutes. And to be honest with you, I didn't get to hear most of it because I've had a frustrating day dealing with a lot of shit that comes with life. But, you know, it was nice to click over and hear those words and hear a president, even though I disagreed with him a lot of the time, I was infuriated with him a lot of the time. To hear him speak with brains, with common sense, with courtesy, with empathy, with sympathy, who acknowledges the greatness of this man who passed. And, you know, that's what we need to get back to in this country. I may not agree. Look, the only president I ever voted for was Barack Obama in 2008. I voted for him again in 2012, but I actually was voting against Mitt Romney, because I've always voted against the bad guy because of the choices we've had. But there's no comparison between what we had for 8 years until this evil orange thing wormed his way into the White House. And I look at people like John Lewis and I say, I wonder who is going to carry his mantle. And actually, he left us a message. He wrote an op-ed for the New York Times, and he left it with the provision that it be published on the day of his funeral. Today was his funeral. So let me share with you what John Lewis wrote. He wrote, "While my time here has now come to an end, I want you to know that in the last days and hours of my life, you inspired me. You filled me with hope about the next chapter of the great American story when you used your power to make a difference in our society. Millions of people motivated simply by human compassion laid down the burdens of division. Around the country and the world, you set aside race, class, age, language, and nationality to demand respect for human dignity. That's why I had to visit Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, though I was admitted to the hospital the following day. I just had to see and feel it for myself that after many years of silent witness, the truth is still marching on. Emmett Till was my George Floyd. He was my Rayshard Brooks, Sandra Bland, and Breonna Taylor. He was 14 when he was killed, and I was only 15 years old at the time. I will never forget the moment when it became so clear that he could easily have been me. In those days, fear constrained us like an imaginary prison, and troubling thoughts of potential brutality committed for no understandable reason were the bars. Though I was surrounded by two loving parents, plenty of brothers, sisters, and cousins, their love could not protect me from the unholy oppression waiting just outside that family circle. Unchecked, unrestrained violence and government-sanctioned terror had the power to turn a simple stroll to the store for some Skittles or an innocent morning jog down a lonesome country road into a nightmare. If we are to survive as one unified nation, we must discover what so readily takes root in our hearts that could rob Mother Emanuel Church in South Carolina of her brightest and best, shoot unwitting concertgoers in Las Vegas, and choke to death the hopes and dreams of a gifted violinist like Elijah McClain. Like so many young people today, I was searching for a way out, or some might say a way in. And then I heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on an old radio. He was talking about the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. He said, we are all complicit when we tolerate injustice. He said it is not enough to say it will get better by and by. He said each of us has a moral obligation to stand up, and speak out. When you see something that is not right, you must say something. You must do something. Democracy is not a state. It is an act, and each generation must do its part to help build what we call the beloved community, a nation and world society at peace with itself. Ordinary people with extraordinary vision can redeem the soul of America by getting in what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. Voting and participating in the democratic process are key. The vote is the most powerful, nonviolent change agent you have in a democratic society. You must use it because it is not guaranteed. You can lose it, John Lewis wrote. He continued, you must also study and learn the lessons of history because humanity has been involved in this soul-wrenching existential struggle for a very long time. People on every continent have stood in your shoes through decades and centuries before you. The truth does not change, and that is why the answers worked out long ago can help you find solutions to the challenges of our time. Continue to build union between movements stretching across the globe, because we must put away our willingness to profit from the exploitation of others. Though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I have done all I can to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence, is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring. And John Lewis finished his final words, his final public words anyway, published in the New York Times today on the day of his funeral. He wrote, "When historians pick up their pens to write the story of the 21st century, let them say that it was your generation who laid down the heavy burdens of hate at last, and that peace finally triumphed over violence, aggression, and war. So I say to you, walk with the wind, brothers and sisters, and let the spirit of peace and the power of everlasting love be your guide." John Lewis died on July 17th, and they say he wrote this essay shortly before his death. And I, for one, am very grateful he left those words for us. And I'm even more grateful that he lived and for what he stood and everything about the man. Rest in peace and rest in power, John Lewis, and thank you for all you've done for this nation. I didn't expect to get so emotional, but reading those words out loud, it happens. We lost a giant, and hopefully, you know, I agree with John Lewis. What we've seen from the young people throughout the, you know, since the murder of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis has been encouraging, has been really encouraging. And as an older person now, I feel confident that this new generation of young people will pick up the mantle of John Lewis and will make him proud. And will make all of us proud again to say we're Americans. Can't say that very much these days. All right, we'll take a quick time out and come back on the other side. It's Thursday. We have Howie Klein coming up, and our guest, who we were going to have last week, but I blew it, a man named Adam Christensen, who's running for Congress from the Gainesville, Florida area for the seat being vacated by Ted Yoho, will pop in for a few minutes as well. So stick around. Thank you for being here today. What a day, huh? What a day. I'm Nicole Sandler. It's NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. Whew. Okay, so Progressive Voices is in ads. I need a minute to kind of gather myself together again. So I didn't play a funny at the beginning of the show, but I have one for you now. And actually, we haven't heard from Jonathan Pye in a while. Jonathan Pye, for those who don't know, is a British comedian. He does these videos. He's basically like a stand-up news reporter on the street. And what he does, he goes out on location. He does his open, you know, what they call a wraparound for the recorded package that's going to run on the TV station. He does his open. And then while allegedly the recorded piece is playing on the TV, he rants, I guess, to the cameraman. And then when the piece ends, he wraps up his rant and finishes off, closes off the piece. So here you have Jonathan Pye with some advice for his fellow Britishmen. Take it away, Jonathan Pye.
As it becomes compulsory to wear masks in shops in England, the government has been asked to end confusion over its face mask policy. I took to the streets to find out what ordinary people think about wearing face masks. I don't get this. What is so fucking confusing? People are so fucking stupid, aren't they? The one thing this government has been clear on is with its advice on wearing face masks. Clear as day. It's just the advice changes depending on what day it is, okay? Right, we were initially told they weren't essential. Then we were told they were essential. Then they weren't, then they were, then they weren't, then they were. Six U-turns. And then they finally declared they definitely were essential, but not for another 2 weeks. Matt Hancock then said face masks didn't do anything. And the next day, Boris said they were very important. 5 weeks ago, the shops opened, but only now face masks need to be worn in them. If they're essential now, they were essential then. So what the fuck is going on? Like I say, clear as day. And I'm happy to report the message has clearly got through, because on my way to work today, everyone's wearing them. You know, nipped into Tesco Metro, everyone's wearing them. Yes, I'm taking the fucking piss, Tim. Italy, France, all across Europe, everyone is wearing a face mask. It's second nature. Why? Because they've been wearing them for fucking months. Why? Because their governments opened up their economies on the proviso that everyone wore a mask and everyone went, oh, okay then. And yet our government still hasn't published full guidance on face masks. Still, we knew this virus was coming in January. By February, it had hit. By March, the entire country was brought to a standstill. Tens of thousands of preventable deaths. Millions without work. Entire industries have collapsed. And the government is still fucking about with its stance on face masks. Whereas to anyone with a fucking brain, their stance should be perfectly obvious. Put a fucking mask on. It's not like we're being asked to shove a tin of beans sideways up your ass to help fight COVID. You're not being asked to chop your own dick off in the name of public health, drown a puppy to help the national effort. No, wear a thin piece of cloth across your mouth and nose to help prevent more unnecessary deaths and further financial hardship to your fellow citizens. You know, unless you have a really good reason not to wear a mask, wear a fucking mask. You know, I find it difficult to breathe with a mask on. Well, if you seriously struggle to breathe with a thin bit of cloth on your face, then you're probably in the high-risk category for COVID-19, and as such, you really need to put a fucking mask on. Yes, they're uncomfortable. Yes, they steam your glasses up. Yes, they chafe your ears and give you spots on your chin. I'll tell you what's worse, though. A fucking ventilator tube down your fucking gullet. I'll tell you what's worse. Financial ruin. Death. Bit of advice. If you're finding the mask uncomfortable, best thing to do is compare notes with a nurse who's had to wear full PPE for 12 hours a day for the last 6 months. Suddenly, it won't seem so bad. Put a fucking mask on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're one of these fucking nut jobs going around, you know, what about my civil liberties, right? Do you remember a couple of months ago when you could get arrested for leaving your own fucking house? Put a fucking mask on. The government, it needs to publish its face mask policy, and its policy needs to be this. Put a fucking mask on. And if you don't, you are a selfish motherfucking arsehole and you will be asked to leave. In summation, put a fucking mask on.
Yes.
Well, for advice on how to wear a face mask, or indeed how you can make your own.
And that, my friends, is Jonathan Pye. Put a fucking mask on. I don't do a good British accent, but there you got it. And he makes sense. Listen to what the man says. All right. You know what? Let's not wait any longer. We've got Howie Klein coming up. Let's get Howie Klein on the show, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Whoops. Hi there. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole Sandler. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm making a mushroom gravy for dinner tonight.
Mm.
Part of the dinner tonight, of course.
Mushroom gravy. So what are you putting it over?
Brown rice.
Oh.
But it's just a nice vegan dinner. I'm having carrots with aziki, which is a kind of seaweed,
uh-huh.
and a red cabbage with apples. So
okay.
Those are, and yeah, so that's our dinner.
I'm going to put together. I've been amassing a little library of vegan recipes because I told you since the lockdown, we've been eating vegan for the most part as well, and uh-huh. And I'm enjoying it. We're gaining weight though because there's so much carbs and stuff that I love, potatoes and rice and things like that. But I'm amassing a collection of great recipes that I think I need to start sharing. So I may put up a page on my website of vegan recipes to share. Just because we can, and why not?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I don't write anything down.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, every now and then, something will be like amazing. And, Roland will say, oh, we have to have that again. That's like so great.
Uh-huh.
Too bad I
don't remember. Well, that's why I do. I print out recipes and then I'll play around with them a little bit and I'll edit them to our taste, but we've hit on a few things. We had a really good mishmash last night that was with white beans and black beans and tomatoes and artichoke hearts and trying to remember what else was in it. It was really good. So yeah, I'll share some good recipes because I'm having fun with it. It's something to take my mind off of the fact that I'm stuck at home, and people are dying around us at a ridiculous rate. Interesting way to start the day today, learning that Herman 999 Kane died and was diagnosed just about a week after he attended Trump's comeback rally in Tulsa.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So,
yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. So, Howie Klein, last week we were talking, and last week what had just happened, I think the day before, was that Florida, soon to be former Congressman Ted Yoho, I did away with my Yoho chorus.
Why?
Because I may still have it. Oh, wait a minute. Do I still have it? Hold on. I may have it somewhere.
Oh, good. And especially with Adam coming on.
I know. I'll look for it when Adam's here. Wait a minute. Oh, I got it. We're number four.
Mr.
That's not it. I'll find it. Anyway, because Adam's here, so I'm sitting here playing with my sound, and we've got Adam Christensen with us. He is running for that seat. Now, thankfully, Ted Yoho is not running for re-election. I guess he's got his eyes on a bigger prize. But Adam Christensen, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me and Howie.
Now we hear you.
Thanks for having me. Oh, Howie, you're going to love this, but apparently my team is having me do a cooking show on Instagram Live Saturday, which is going to be a disaster, as we've talked about.
So what are you cooking?
I don't know. I don't know what we're cooking. Whatever it's going to be, it's going to go poorly, but I'm going to have a lot of fun doing it.
If you want a good vegan recipe.
You only cook when you go on camping trips.
He's right. The only thing I know how to make is some sort of stew that I can cook over the fire. And if I don't have that, it's game over. So this these newfangled like oven and stovetop kind of thing and microwave, not so good at that.
No. So how did they rope you into doing this?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's funny. I can send you some vegan recipes if you like.
I love that.
So how are things in the district, in Florida's third district, in the week since the Yoho dust up?
They've been kind of insane, actually, in a lot of really good ways. And then also, obviously the fact that, coronavirus is hitting Central Florida and North Central Florida pretty hard right now. And so we are in a huge hot spot. But at the same time, a lot of different things have happened, especially with Yoho, that have just really blown up nationally. And so it's really put North Central Florida on the map for a lot of different reasons. And it's really put our race into focus, which has been pretty nice as far as our race goes, but not so good for him or his people.
No. So I'm guessing he's under a lot of fire. Now, what about the other? Who else is in the race? The primary here in Florida is August 18th. Are there other challengers on the left? Or do you have
a feel? Well, there's 11 Republicans.
Really worth talking about. The real problem or the real race is going to be, you know, there are primaries on both sides, but there are two obvious winners. So on the Democratic side, it's Adam. And on the Republican side, it's this guy named Adam Sapp. I'm sorry, not Adam Sapp, Judson Sapp. And he's just the son of some rich guy who failed at everything he's tried to do in his life, including like a long stint in Hollywood where he tried to be an actor. And I think he was an extra on a couple of things, and that's his acting career. But his father has basically underwritten his whole life and even made him CEO of one of his companies, which is a joke. But that's who Adam is going to be running against. Judson Sapp.
Didn't we already have one of those here in Florida? I think his name was Patrick Murphy.
Yes, he's something like Patrick Murphy, as a matter of fact. But actually, something like Patrick Murphy, but believe it or not, worse.
I believe it because he's a Republican.
Exactly.
Right. So, Adam, you're the district. Are you cover the Gainesville area?
Yeah, I'm actually located in Gainesville. That's where I live. And then it covers basically up to the Jacksonville suburbs and down to Ocala. So it's okay. A pretty big area.
And how is Gainesville faring? Gainesville, of course, for those who don't know, is where the University of Florida is. And obviously with the COVID, is Gainesville hopping or is it a ghost town or something in between?
It was a ghost town for most of this. I mean, it usually is for most of the summer, but it's actually starting to get and pick back up to normal, which is it's extremely concerning because you drive around and you have people out in their yards playing beer pong and all sorts of things like normal. And it's just one of those things where a lot of people are just still not taking it seriously, and they really should be.
Yeah, they should be. Howie?
And that's a really important part of this district because that's the Democratic part of the district, is that county. It's fairly overwhelmingly Democrat, and for Adam to win, he's got to have a huge turnout there.
And any indication? I mean, what college students? Do they vote where they go to school or where their parents live? That's still the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, but we've also seen a lot of people obviously go to vote by mail, and so they're using their dorm address or places like that. But, you know, we're actually starting to see right now Republicans are terrified. And the reason I know that is that they are sending out basically mailers to the heavily Republican parts of our district, basically warning them about AOC coming to take their guns and all sorts of things. You never see that. Like that does not happen because they're never thinking that it's even going to be an issue. And right now they are spending money in places they've never had to spend money before. And it's amazing. Like they are terrified and we are loving it.
I wonder, have any of the Florida Republican Congress members criticized Trump at all with his mishandling of the COVID crisis or anything like that? Or I'm looking for breaks, you know, cracks in the glass around him. I think they're starting today. In fact, when he floated the idea,
you won't find it there.
Well, not in Florida. Right. Today, I was surprised, though, after he floated his tweet about postponing the election from November 3rd, that the pushback came from all sides, including Mitch McConnell, which actually surprised me.
Right. But a guy like Judson Sapp is not the kind of guy that's going to criticize Trump ever. You know, he's the kind of guy that'll like sit around and wait and see what the consensus is in the party. And, you know, he'll say, oh, well, you know, DeSantis is doing this and Mast is doing that. And, you know, Yoho is doing that. And, you know, and then he'll make up his mind by just doing exactly what they want. He's the kind of guy who's he's very right wing, but he's also not a leader on things. He's much more of a follower than a leader.
So he's not as much of a leader as Yoho?
Yoho! Well, Yoho's insane. That's a different. I don't know if he's a leader. For a leader, you have to have followers. Yoho is just a
a crazy person.
Gotcha. I gotcha. I just wanted the opportunity to play the Yo-Ho drop because I found it. Although you probably didn't hear
it. I loved it. I loved it.
I'll send it to you.
Judson Sapp actually today put out a tweet, and I actually thought it was like one of his opponents doing almost like a hit job on him, but it literally had splashed across his face like Trump Republican.
Oh,
and it was his own tweet, and I was just like, oh boy. And then we also saw one of his the guy who has the most money in the race on the Republican side put out a bunch of mailers calling him a left-wing liberal Hollywood actor, and then claiming that he had fraudulently voted while he was in California, all of which is true. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. They're starting to eat their own.
Right. Yeah. They're all in survival mode, I think. I mean, we're seeing all the, you know, the polls are just not looking good. And there was something I just saw the other day about the Republicans' chance for taking back the House, which was almost laughable. But I don't like to get overconfident. You know, the polls are what they are. It looks like it should be a complete rout. The Democrats should take back the Senate, hold on to the House, and take the White House. But, you know,
they'll increase their majority in the House.
Uh-huh.
So even better than just hold it, they will they'll be much bigger there. And if we manage to elect, you know, some progressives like Adam, the House will be a much better place.
Yes. Oh, without a doubt. And that's what we need more of you. We need more progressives. I mean, seeing AOC last week was just such a powerful moment. And so, yes, we need to grow our numbers in Congress. Hey,
I think one big thing with AOC especially is she understands something better than anybody else. It's that politics is personal. And it matters. And especially when you grow up having to scrap and claw for everything that you get,
mm-hmm.
you understand what it takes for other people to survive. And you understand that the people that go to Washington in the first place, and they're just there because they want the name recognition or because they want the power, that those kind of people, they're not there to help anyone but themselves. And for her, like, it matters because
right.
it has to. And like for people like, especially, you know, like me or other people running across the country who are latching onto our races and are so excited, it matters because they see themselves in us and we are them. And if we can actually have more people like that who are making decisions and going there and actually fighting for us, that's what matters at the end of the day.
Absolutely. That's what it's about. That's why, you know, that's why Howie does what he does. It's why I do what I do. You know, we're here in Florida and we're going through all this COVID stuff. And we are the epicenter of the world right now for this disease, which is frightening. But we're also in the middle of, well, the beginning, almost the middle of hurricane season. And there's a storm coming at us this weekend. Now, the good news is that it looks like it's just a tropical storm. It's not a hurricane, but it still can cause some damage. Does that freak you out knowing that it looks like it's coming straight up the middle of the state? Or the last time I looked, that's where it looked like it was going.
Well, let's just recap 2020 so far.
Yes.
we are running a campaign mm-hmm. in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
And it might even be in the middle of a hurricane in the middle of a pandemic.
That's right.
So at this point, we've had so many things thrown at us that we don't know what to do with. We have to figure out a way to keep functioning. And so at this point, I don't know what else they're going to throw at us. There was like killer hornets or something
right.
at one point. Like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
No, nobody does. I guess that's part of the fun of it.
Charm.
The charm. A few weeks ago, Howie brought on somebody else. She was the head of the Florida Democratic Environmental Caucus of Florida, and her name was Janelle Christensen. Is there any relation there? Are you guys related?
No, and Howie's
no.
asked me this. No, and Howie's asked me the same question multiple times. Actually,
okay, just
it's
had
the same though. That's very interesting.
Yes, that's unusual because it's not. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, Janelle is fantastic.
Yeah, she is. I was very impressed with her. Howie, got anything else?
Well, actually, why don't we just let Adam tell us how he's going to be the first Democrat in memory to win this district. Why is it that, Adam, why is it that you're going to be able to win in a district where Democrats have been having a really hard time?
Ooh, we could be here a while.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, hey, I'll just throw it at you. Here's what we've got going on. We have 50 people under the age of 26, mostly UF college students that have decided that we don't have any other choice besides to give it everything that we have and figure out a way to win this district. We have had representation like Ted Yoho for 8 years. There is a culture of disrespect. There is a culture of just of silence and making sure that people are not treated as human. And at this moment, we know that with the with climate change, that if we don't fix it, our coast is gone. And so right now we have a movement of people that are basically standing up and saying we care more about people than we do about giant companies. We care about people more than we do about hedge funds and billionaires. And right now they are not just fighting against that, but they are fighting for their way of life. And so we are seeing the rural parts of the state that are rising up and saying we have not done well. Not only have we not done well, we are scared about whether or not we're going to lose our home, whether or not we're going to be able to have a job in the next month, and whether or not if we get sick, we're going to go bankrupt because we don't have health insurance. Mm-hmm. And so not only do we see that, but we just see this incredible hunger for people to actually be real and not to just lie to your face and stab you behind the back. And so right now we have organized one of the largest coalitions and most diverse coalitions that North Central Florida has ever seen. We have made sure that there are people, and Janelle is a huge part of it, that there are people running in every single house district across the state of Florida so that we can fight for every single acre of land and Republicans don't have a choice but to have to spend money in places they never would before, as we're seeing. On top of that, you got felony disenfranchisement, which is going to be knocked down for the general. So you have over a million people that are going to be able to vote that were not able to vote before. And the majority of them are minorities. On top of that, you have Ted Yoho, who is retiring. That's going to be a 2.4% swing just in name recognition alone. And you got us going up against a liberal Democrat who tried to become an actor and his father tried to pay for it for 14 years before he got sick of paying for his son to be a bum in Hollywood. And so at this moment, we have probably the best chance that we have ever had. But the only reason we have that chance is because we are real with people. Because we are fighting for things that matter, mm-hmm. because we are not afraid to actually stand up, put on the boxing gloves and take it to them. And we're not just sitting back and playing defense. We do not water down policy ever. We just speak in a language that people can understand.
And
that, and at the end of the day, I think is what can work.
That's awesome. And you're the anti-Yoho.
Yoho, Yoho.
I will email that to you because, you know, you never have too many Yohos around when you're running against a Yoho's legacy. Yeah, sorry. Howie, so with the primary.
Well, I just want to ask Adam one more thing.
Yes.
An environmental doctrine of some kind came out today in Florida. Did you see that? I saw a lot of tweets about it.
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, Rock, who's running in a House district inside my congressional district, was one of the leaders in putting together essentially a Green New Deal for Florida.
I believe
that's what you're talking about, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, we are currently going through with our policy
Rock
team.
Are sort of campaigning together, right?
Yes. So, like I said, he is one of the five House districts within our congressional district. And so we are trying to do everything we can to not only bump up his margins and help him in his area, but make sure that we can try to get him voter data, make sure that we can actually put together a competitive attack in his area. And our policy team right now is going through the document he sent over to get signed. We've got a lot of people that are committing not only to just backing a Green New Deal, but committing to town halls to make sure that, you know, voters are able to actually hear from us about, number one, why it's important. Number two, why it's going to make their lives better. And so, there's a lot of exciting things happening, especially in North Central Florida. And that's not something you hear every year.
Do we know what the vote by mail ballot request rate has been, if it's been elevated since there's been a push on to vote by mail because of the pandemic?
We've increased the lead. The Florida Democratic Party has increased their lead by almost 500,000 vote by mail ballots.
Wow. Nice.
2 years ago, I believe they only had a lead of 18,000 So we are looking at a substantial amount of absentee ballots. And as we know, people who have absentee ballots and vote by mail ballots, they vote at twice the rate as somebody going to the actual polls. So that might be a huge advantage that we have that nobody's even talking about.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, that's exciting. So August 18th, Florida, I've got my ballot sitting here. And the only reason I haven't filled it out yet, honestly, is because there are judges. There's a supervisor of election. There's a sheriff all on the ballot. And I got to figure out how I'm voting in all of those. My congressman is Ted Deutch. Howie and I have talked about him before. He's okay. He's not great. He pisses me off about certain things, like he endorsed Michael Bloomberg. Like, what? And I know it was because of the gun issue, kind of, but what, really? But, you know, it could be worse. We could have a yo-ho here.
Yo-ho, yo-ho.
Sorry.
I think Bloomberg might be worse.
I think so.
You don't endorse an oligarch to take care of oligarchs.
No. So that's that. But so that's why we want more progressives like you. And by the way, the Florida DEC, I believe, come this next term is going to be a whole lot more progressive because there was a concerted effort to get progressives like me to be precinct committee people throughout the state. And I am the new precinct committee person for my district. So I know there are a lot of others like me, and we're going to bring the progressive power to Florida to hopefully get a little more of our energy into the Democratic Party here, which we sorely need.
Yeah, it's a really bad Democratic Party. You know, I always say if it wasn't for Ohio, Florida would have the worst party of any Democratic Party in the country. And I mean, they basically don't do exactly what Adam is trying to do, which is they don't try to challenge the Republicans in tough districts. They have their little bases of power, and they don't go beyond that. They just think that's, you know, that's all they need to do is just keep winning in the areas where they already rule. And that's why they have such a small minority. I mean, it's pathetic. The House is their House is pathetic.
Yep.
I mean, Florida is a 50-50 state.
Yeah.
I mean, if any, there are more registered Democrats than there are Republicans in the state.
Yes, there are.
And yet the Republicans have an overwhelming majority everywhere. And why is that? And that I blame the Democratic Party. And I hope that when you're there, you get rid of some of these bums who are in there now.
Well, you know me.
You're the ones that are going to pick the new chair, right, of the party?
I think so. I don't know. I have no idea. But I do know that I will, you know, I'll approach it as I do everything, with gusto, with fire, with passion, and with
right?
I mean, if you're going to do it, you don't do it half-assed. You go all the way. And the Florida Democratic Party has been really screwed up for as long as I've been here. So maybe we can make it a little better, a little more progressive.
How are they with you, Adam? Are they being helpful? Are they not being harmful, right?
No, they're definitely not being, to be honest, we've had very little contact with the actual Florida Democratic Party. And the only times we've had contact is because we forced the contact and we were able to get them on the phone when they didn't want to be. I am really hoping that they haven't polled our location in 2.5 years. Nobody has any idea what the numbers actually look like right now. And I have floated it by them and I've said, look, like, if you're constantly playing defense, you're never going to win. Mm-hmm. You have to score once in a while. You have to actually push it. You have to push the attack. And if you're going on the attack, that makes the other side play defense. I mean, at the end of the day, that is what we have to do. And so what I would love for the Florida Democratic Party to do is say, look, we're actually going to start looking at some of these races that we've written off a little while, do a little recount, and see where we should be spending our money. Because at this moment, I think the best ROI for the Florida Democratic Party is in North Central Florida. The most amount of votes that they could possibly get is North Central Florida, and they need to start thinking that way.
Now,
J.D. Shulton in Iowa basically told the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, to just take their money and shove it, because they were saying to him, if you want help from us, they had begged him to run again. He was thinking about running for the Senate seat, and they begged him not to. They begged him to run for the House seat. And now they're saying to him, if you want our money, which they already promised him when they lured him into this, you have to do this, and you have to hire our people, and you have to use our consultants, and you have to spend this much time on the phone every day. And, you know, they start giving him a bunch of things that he has to do. And he basically, not basically, he said to them, I don't need your money. Shove it. And he did it very publicly. So have you had any connection at all to the DCCC? Are they helping you with your race? Are they giving you advice or giving you anything?
Until we have a +4 or less district, we're not going to hear from them. That's one reason that they should start doing polling. On top of that, I think one thing that we've for a long time screwed up on as Democrats is that we think that to win in Republican districts that we have to go moderate ourselves.
Wrong.
And my response to that has always been that you should never water down policy, because if you do, number one, no one will respect you anymore. They won't vote for you. At least if you stick to your guns and you stick to your morals and you stick to your character and you believe in something, people have to respect that. As soon as you believe in nothing, you stand no chance. And I think especially here in Florida, you could be someone who believes that left politics are the way to go. But if you don't actually stand by that, they will not give you the time of the day. I mean, I grew up in a very conservative family. I grew up in a red district. I grew up a Republican.
Wow.
And that's what I know, that they respect you more if you actually believe in something, even if they don't agree with you, than if you don't believe in anything and just try to win their vote.
Absolutely. We've had this discussion many times, me and Howie. You know, if they want a Republican, they'll vote for the Republican. What they haven't been getting is a real progressive candidates, because they're always told, oh, no, you need to moderate. You need to be in the center. And I think that's a way to get progressives to say, fuck that. He's not my guy. And for, you know, somebody who would want a Republican, they'll vote for the Republican. So.
Yep. Well, Adam is working hard to be able to talk to the people in his district and present progressive policy in a way that they can understand it and feel good about it.
That's great. Adam Christensen, your website is forthemanynotjustme.com. Is that because Christensen people can spell too many different ways?
Nobody ever spells my name right.
So forthemanynotjustme.com is where you can find Adam Christensen's website. Again, he's running to be the Democratic nominee from Florida's 3rd Congressional District and eventually to become our next congressman from Florida's 3rd. And I think it's about time. So thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today, Adam. It's really great to meet you. And I'm sorry about last week, but I'm so glad you could join us today.
No, absolutely. I've really enjoyed it. And Howie, you, at some point, man, you're going to have to jump on an Instagram live with me, teach me how to cook. I think that's just going to have to happen.
I can't figure out how to get on Instagram. I'd like to, but I don't know how.
All right. Well, you can do this off the air. I don't know Instagram either, though. I need to get Instagram going too. Adam Christian said, we'll make it happen. We should do a cooking show one day. Because why not? All right, Adam, thank you. We're just about out of time. So we'll let you go. I know you got to get back to campaigning. Thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully next time we talk, I can call you Congressman. Adam Christensen.
Thank you, Adam.
And Howie Klein, as always,
thanks,
a pleasure. Thank you. And we'll talk next Thursday. All right. I think Howie's gone, too. So that's it. Oh, you're still there? Okay. Bye, Howie.
Bye-bye.
All right. Tomorrow's Friday. Actually, we're going to be speaking with Ellis Case, who has a new book out about the work of the ACLU. And the book is called Democracy, If We Can Keep It. That's kind of questionable right now. Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Stay safe. Wear a mask or just stay in and, you know, be good. See you tomorrow. Bye.